Welcome to Cover to Cover. I'm Richard Walensky. My guest is Michael Connelly, whose latest novel is City of Bones. Michael Connelly writes detective fiction, noir fiction. His hero is named Hieronymus Harry Bosch, and he is an LAPD detective, at least in City of Bones. Michael Connelly, let's start at the beginning of your career here before we move on to City of Bones in particular. I read that you decided to write crime fiction after reading Raymond Chandler. Is that true?
Yeah. I was in college at the University of Florida. I'd been a long-time voracious reader of crime novels, but somehow his work had escaped me. And I saw a Robert Altman adaptation of The Long Goodbye. So this is early 70s. And that made me go to the book that was based on, and that made me go to the rest of the books. And that somehow that kind of switched me or led to this transition of wanting to be a writer of these kind of stories.
Though actually you spent many years as a newspaper reporter.
Right. I saw, or I hoped, that newspaper work would be a means to an end, you know, that it would teach me the craft of writing, the work ethic needed, deadlines and so forth, and more importantly would, by virtue of my press pass, get me into the world I wanted to write about, the police world. You know, because I guess I had this choice of, do I want to become a cop to learn about it, or do I want to be more of an observer than a partaker in that world? And so I went the other route, observer.
So you actually knew from the day you became a reporter that you were not going to be a reporter?
It sounds like a master plan now, like this guy who knows everything that's going to happen. I'd say I hoped I would not be a reporter for long, you know, and I'm lucky, very fortunate that hope has been realized.
You started writing in southern Florida. In fact, you worked, I have here you won an award for a piece where you interviewed airline crash survivors, is that correct?
Yeah, I worked in Fort Lauderdale for the newspaper there, and I guess the biggest story I was ever involved in as a journalist was a plane that was flying from Fort Lauderdale to Dallas to Los Angeles crashed on landing in Dallas, and it was an unusual case because it was a major airline crash, yet there were 29 survivors. And so myself and two other reporters spent about a year tracking down the reporters, finding those who wanted to talk about their experience, and ended up writing almost a novella-length report on it for a magazine.
At that particular time, were you thinking that you would eventually use the Southern Florida setting like writers, I guess, who hadn't yet started but became very successful, like Edna Buchanan or Carl Hiaasen?
Yeah, it was kind of the right before the crest of the Florida crime wave. And I did actually try to write two novels that were set in Florida. They were like PI novels set in Florida, and they became my learning experiences. I never even attempted to get them published, but I was, again, learning how to write a novel. And then this airplane story intervened, and it kind of was a ticket to where I wanted to go, and I ended up going to the Los Angeles Times. And so the third time I tried to write a novel, that became the first Harry Bosch novel.
And that was The Black Echo.
Right.
When you were assembling the character of Harry Bosch, first of all, the name.
Where it came from? Well, I, by happenstance, see, a lot of things happened to me in college that are still useful to me. By happenstance, I took an art appreciation class in college, and the teacher was fascinated with the painter Hieronymus Bosch, the 15th century painter. And so by virtue of that, I studied him for about a month while I was in college. And then, you know, many years later, 10, 12 years later, I'm constructing this novel and putting together a detective, and I knew enough from reading you know, people like James Lee Burke, who I know we have in common, is one of our favorites, that it was about character, you know, that was the key thing. And so you never miss a chance to put on a stroke of character, so don't name your character Joe Smith when you can name him Hieronymus Bosch and hopefully have some resonance to the name, or a bit of a metaphoric quality, and that's what I was going for with that.
When you first wrote The Black Echo, you knew you were working on a series then?
Well, again, I hoped I would. You know, my favorite reading at that time were the series. There's a few series that were able to sustain my interest and enjoyment, and that would have been the ultimate goal. So I didn't hold anything back, but I hoped that I was filling in this character with enough detail and interesting detail, telling details, that he would have a life after one book.
It struck me reading City of Bones, your latest, that this actually falls less in the private detective or detective category than the police procedural.
I wrote my first book that was published with Harry in it, and when the first review came out in Publishers Weekly, it called it a police procedural, and until that point, I had never even heard of that classification. And so I try to my best to just keep my head down and write the stories that I'm interested in or that I think readers will be interested in it, and let other people classify them. But police procedural seems to be my classification for Harry Bosch stories.
The ultimate police procedural novel is the one by, say, Ed McBain. Were you familiar with McBain's work?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I've been reading his series. Also, there were some of Joseph Weinbaum's books were very, all of them, I guess, can be seen as police procedural, but some were more about detectives and patrol officers, and the detective novels were the ones I really gravitated towards.
Well, so there you were in Los Angeles working as a crime reporter, writing about a cop. In City of Bones, there's a great deal of conflict between the reporters, the media, and the cops. How did you deal with that?
I really kind of tried to draw from my own experiences. I mean, as institutions, the LAPD and the LA Times are, you know, really can't stand each other. And it's when you lower that down to the foot soldiers, which I was one. I was a, you know, basic reporter. The reporter has to penetrate the wall that's been in existence there for a century, probably, and get through there and get what he needs as a reporter. And in getting through that wall, you often make deals with detectives, you know, kind of like, help me on this story, I'll help you on that story, that type of thing. And so I think that's what my experience was as a reporter, and I tried to bring that into the fiction. But I hung around enough cops and got rejected by enough cops to know how Harry Bosch would view the reporters he has to deal with in this story.
What year did you move to L.A. then?
1987.
So you were there for the events of, what was it, 92?
Yeah, 92, the riots. I was there for a very tumultuous decade in social upheaval, geologic upheaval, political upheaval. It was an interesting time.
Did your contact with the police and working on the Harry Bosch books, what kind of perspective did that give you on, say, what happened on the 92 riots that, say, other reporters didn't have?
Well, I mean, I think for good or for bad, I had a sympathetic or empathic strike zone with cops. I just think it's a very difficult job to do good. Now, it doesn't mean that I accept or excuse the some of the behavior of the LAPD in the last 10 to 15 years. I certainly don't. But at the same time, the scandals of the last decade made it even harder for the cops that I know are good and dedicated people to do their jobs. And I think that gave me some kind of bond with them that I don't really know other reporters had or shared.
How does Harry, your character, deal with all of that, do you think?
Well, Harry always has obstacles in his path, and I think that's how you get into delineating your character. And Harry is a guy who, doesn't suffer fools well, and unfortunately in the bureaucracy of the LAPD there's a lot of fools, and at least in the fiction, and I think, you know, to some extent in real life. And so he has become a master, I think, of getting around and getting over the bureaucratic hurdles that are put in his way.
Well, City of Bones deals with forensic research, particularly the research on what turns out to be 20-year-old bones dug up out of a hillside. How did you arrive at that particular tale?
Kind of a curious history. I took part in a forensic symposium at UCLA about, I think it was 4 or 5 years ago, and it was a a four-day-long thing where many people, cops, and actually there was a fair number of writers there, all took different classes and different levels of forensics. And I went actually to take the track that dealt with computer crime because it was something I was writing about at the time. And I think there's a sense that this is the crime wave of the future or of right now, the Internet and so forth. So I was there to study all that. In the classroom next to me was an anthropology, forensic anthropology track, and they were having classes there. And during breaks, what I would do is go into the anthropology classroom and pick up the handouts they were giving the students that were taking there. And I just took all, you know, a big stack of reports and academic stories and so forth home with me, and a few weeks later went through it all and came across an academic study on a case very similar to what ends up in City of Bones. It was a case of a 12-year-old girl whose bones were found in a shallow grave, and what the bones were able to tell the detectives about what happened to her and who she was and so forth. And I became both fascinated by the science and how much it could reveal, and also obviously saddened and pierced by the crime of a 12-year-old girl, you know, murdered and buried and forgotten about. And so I kind of carried that around with me for a couple of years, and it came out in City of Bones.
There are several novelists who write specifically about forensics. Do you stay away from them? I mean, and how do you know when you're writing this that somebody hasn't already written virtually an identical book?
Well, you really don't. I mean, I think the best thing you can do is keep your head down and write your own story. And when you become heavily reliant on forensics and procedure and detail, then I think you are possibly going to get into a situation where stories will seem similar. I mean, there's a huge number of books out there about bones and so forth. And so what I tried to do is start this book with the forensic stuff and with the procedural stuff, but then it becomes, hopefully, in my mind at least, a more of a personal journey for Harry.
The book takes a turn when a particular character is outed as a child molester and winds up committing suicide. Did that actually happen?
A form of that happened, or it has a bit of a, I guess, a reality to it. What that was in this book is, I guess, a device. Because one of the things I'm doing in this book is exploring media responsibility, and I think there, and also the again the old saw, or the thing I always come back to, is the problems with the bureaucracy of the LAPD, and so there's a whole, I guess, sequence there where information that should not be leaked is leaked, and it becomes a bit of a media attention or a frenzy type thing, and as you say, it outs somebody who has a secret in his past that's been buried longer than these bones have been buried, and it kind of forces him into the television cameras, and he decides not to do that.
Is there a difference in terms of responsibility and how people deal with it between, say, television reporters and newspaper?
I think there is, because in, you know, television is usually more immediate. The ability to broadcast images live, I think, brings a different responsibility than, say, a newspaper reporter who gets his information, goes back, and has more time to contemplate its meaning and its context before delivering it to the public. And I think what happens with television is that decisions have to be made very quickly, and it's hard, you know, everyone knows the quicker you have to make a decision, the more difficult it is to make the right decision.
There's also a scene where a reporter manages to sneak into a truck, mm-hmm, where food is being served. Is that based on a real
No. Okay. No, but I was trying not to I was writing this book, and I was thinking, oh, maybe I'm being too hard on TV guys. I was a reporter for a long time, and I know there's, you know, a newsroom is the same, is a microcosm of society. So you're going to have good and bad reporters, and you're going to have unscrupulous reporters, and they are out there. And so I dropped in a newspaper reporter who, it's a judgment call, but what he did could be seen as crossing a line.
Harry Bosch, being a cop, has a partner in this book, and he's had other partners in the past. And it seems as if his relationship's a kind of problematic.
Yes, he is a... As someone in authority tells him in this book, trouble follows him around, and maybe he should consider turning in his badge. But a lot of that is the device of fiction, because it's the thing I often repeat, is it's all about character, and how do you show your character, and it's how he goes around or over obstacles, how he deals with conflict. So I really try to put conflict on every page. A long time ago, I read something that Kurt Vonnegut said. Someone asked him, what's the best thing you can tell a writer, best piece of advice? And his was, make sure on every page everyone wants something, even if it's only a glass of water. And that boils down to character, you know. Make sure everybody wants something. Make sure there's always conflicts. And so that's what I consciously do. And so, therefore, Harry does have conflicts with his partner, but he also has a very trusting relationship and so forth.
You're listening to an interview with Michael Connelly, whose latest novel is City of Bones. You've written now half dozen Harry Bosch books, give or take. How do you keep the character fresh for you?
Good question. I mean, that's the mystery of writing, and it's the thing that I'm most often thinking about. How do I keep this guy going? Because I am fascinated with this character. After so many books, I'm still interested in what his next moves will be and where he's going. And there's no answer to that, because some of the best series of fiction that I have loved get stale from time to time. And so I think what we're all the writers of series are out there groping around in the dark trying to figure it out. One of the things I have done is not write about Harry Bosch all the time. And I've actually fallen into almost a repeating cycle of alternating Harry Bosch with another book. And what I have found is those other books, during the year I go off to write them, during that year I start missing Harry Bosch and wanting to get back to him. And so when I'm done those one-offs or standalones, whatever you want to call them, I come back to Harry with renewed vigor and excitement, and I really want to write about him. And I'm a believer that whatever happens in the writing experience will translate to the reading experience. So if I have that vibe, that's a good way to start.
Your one-offs, as you call them, The Poet, Bloodwork, Void Moon,
mm-hmm.
Very different books, yet each of them is also a crime novel.
Yeah, they all fall within the same genre, but when I do say to myself I'm not going to write about Harry Bosch this year, I at least do something that will challenge me a bit, still staying within the confines of the genre. Like with Void Moon, I wrote about a burglar, so I was writing about a criminal for the first time as the character that carries the story. It was also a female protagonist. That was new for me. The Poet I wrote in the first person for the first and only time. So these are probably subtle challenges to the outside world or to the reader, but to me, who is about to spend a year on a project, they are pretty significant.
What happens halfway through a project and you finally go, God, this is okay, but I'm bored?
If that happens, you're in really big trouble. And it's only sort of happened to me once, and what I did was I chucked the project because, again, what happens to me in the writing process, it's going to come through to the reading process. So if you ever hit this point, like, I'm losing my interest in this, guess what? The reader's going to really lose their interest.
Well, what happens then if you got a contract? What do you do?
Well, you get jammed up. I mean, I was like 240 pages into a story when I hit that wall. And it didn't matter that I owed a book at the end of the year. I couldn't, the greater decision was not to turn in a book that would be one I wasn't happy with, and the reader certainly wouldn't be happy with. So I got rid of the pages and started over, and I just had to work more and work faster.
Michael Connelly, in writing about a real place like Los Angeles and fictional characters, you sometimes have to hit a kind of brick wall where reality, the reality of the city, meets the fiction of your characters. How do you deal with that, particularly, say, after what happened in 92 or OJ or other events like that?
Well, I mean, I do write very contemporary, so all the events that happen I try to bring into the books as soon as I can, so they're very close in time to what's actually happening in Los Angeles. And I have found that you get the geography or the solid places as accurately down as you can. And from that, you know, the fiction springs and it becomes more believable to the reader if you're really actually on the right road and the police station is in the right spot and so forth. And it all kind of melds together. But the idea of bringing in real things, real social events, real tragic events, and so forth, there's always something you got to do with a lot of care. I mean, in City of Bones, there's some references to September 11th, just a couple subtle ones. But, you know, and that came from a lot of discussion with my editor about it. But, you know, this book takes place, it starts on January 1st of this year, less than 4 months after September 11th. And the personal journey Harry Bosch finds himself on is one where he's trying to find validity in what he does. And I just thought it would be, you know, an artistic crime to not mention September 11th as part of that thinking process.
When did you finish the first draft?
Well, the book was actually completely done before September 11th. And what happened was, aside from the terrible tragedy and the important things of what happened on September 11th, like a lot of other businesses, the book business flatlined almost right away. And that caused a bit of a panic in publishing circles, and so a lot of books were pushed back. And this book was originally going to come out in January this year. It's set in January this year. And they came to me and said, we want to push it back to April and see how the market recovers from this. And I said, fine, but let me have the book back because I want to put in a couple of these references. And that's where we had the discussion of you know, there being a fine line between exploitation and valid comment.
When you're researching a book like this, how do you get it as accurate as you can in terms of dealing with the nuts and bolts of police work, even searching for clues on the internet?
A lot of it, well, what I try to do, I mean, I have this long experience as a reporter, so I think I have a baseline knowledge of how things would happen. And so what I normally do is write and ask questions later. I write a whole draft, and at that point, I take either sections or the entire manuscript and give it to people who are in the know, detectives and so forth that have helped me over the years, who are willing to read manuscripts or parts of manuscripts. And they read my first draft material and tell me what I got right, what I got wrong, and what they would do in these certain circumstances. And then I go through in a second draft and make changes. I got to say, I don't always make the changes they suggest, because being deadly accurate about the procedure is also to be deadly boring. And so I have to kind of pick and choose and go for what I call telling details, the one or two succinct details that really kind of open this world and lead the reader to believe this is how it's done.
What was the biggest fudge in City of Bones?
City of Bones, Harry Bosch starts a romance with a patrol officer named Julia, and when you first meet her, in the, I think the second chapter, she has blue eyes, and when you see her about 10 chapters later, she has brown eyes. And that got through me, it got through my editor, got through the copy editing process, got through everybody, and then a reader right away spotted it. And I have a website, and it's been mentioned, people letting me know about that repeatedly.
How about with the cops? Anything that you did that in any of your books which was wrong, and what could you do?
Well, the one thing I've learned is to not get too specific about weapons, guns in particular, because not only cops but also gun collectors and so forth are very keyed in on that. And I've gotten gun stuff wrong two or three times. The most glaring was a thing I wrote out of thinking common sense. In one of the first books, Harry Bosch used a revolver, which has a barrel that comes out and you load it with bullets, and Harry is left-handed. So I assumed there would have to be a left-handed revolver, so the barrel would come out on the right side so your right hand could load it. Turns out there isn't, and I can't believe that you know, years and years of decades and centuries of weapons, and no one made a gun that a left-hander can use properly or quickly.
Well, Michael Connolly, then, let's turn that around. What did you get right that astonished you the most?
Oh, you know, I don't get astonished by stuff because, like I said, I have this baseline. And it does make me feel good, you know, when I give a section of a book to a homicide detective and he comes back and says, hey, it's great, that's how I would have done it, you know. And that's, it doesn't really astonish me, but it sure makes me feel good.
Michael Connolly, you're in writing in L.A. and you're in Hollywood, and your novel Bloodwork is becoming a major film with Clint Eastwood and Angelica Houston, directed by Eastwood. Have you had much work on that film yourself?
Not really. My involvement has been really limited. And 4 or 5 years ago when Eastwood came to me and optioned the book, he told me that. He said, you know, I have a crew that I work with, and you're not going to hear from me till I make the movie. And he was right. 4 years went by, and then a script landed on my threshold of my door, and I sat down there and read it, and that was the first I had really heard from him in years. And I liked the script. It was done quite well. It was adapted for Eastwood, obviously. Eastwood's 70 or so, and the guy in the book is like 48, and they adapted the script for an older character, and they did it quite well, and they preserved the most important thing, which was the character's journey, his emotional journey, if you will. And that was totally intact, and that's what I was hoping for, and so I was quite pleased with that. I did have like a few very minor comments, and wrote them up and faxed them to Eastwood, and he responded that he was going to use them all. And so there was like a courtesy, and also some a little bit more than that. When I went out to watch them film some of it, I watched one of the scenes that I had made a comment on, and the change I suggested had been made. So that made me feel good that I was at least having a little bit of a voice in it.
You also were involved in a television show called Level 9. How did you get involved in TV, and how did that work?
I think you should have said an ill-fated television show. I don't know. It's something about living in Los Angeles and that world being so close at hand. I just feel like I'm a storyteller, and I want to try different ways of telling stories. So I've tried my hand unsuccessfully so far at writing scripts in the past. And so the next step was a television show. And so myself and a former colleague from my newspaper days put together this idea for a federal task force that was targeting computer crime. And we went from there. It jumped all the hurdles and actually got on the air. It only lasted 7 episodes, though. The irony of it is it got canceled because it was only drawing about 6 million people a week to watch, and that shows the difference between, you know, TV and movies and books, because I think if you took all my books, added up everyone who's ever read them, it wouldn't even reach 6 million, and yet that was a failure rating in television. It's like a night and day experience from going from writing a book where you're in your room and no one bothers you and no one tells you what to do to writing and having dozens of people offer you their advice, some of it you have to take. You know, I lasted in it a year. It was a interesting experience. So actually, a little bit of it comes out in City of Bones, and you know, I'm a writer, so whatever happens to me, you know, we'll go into the blender and come out at some point.
You've been listening to an interview with Michael Connelly, whose latest novel is City of Bones. I'm Richard Walensky on Cover to Cover.